Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.
Excellent. Welcome to the show, season finale. Barry Katz is here for our first ever part two interview. And Barry, I tried to get the sound guy to change it to Alan Wee.
Oh, you did?
I tried to, but he wasn't available.
Really?
Yeah, he was like...
That's too bad.
He's like, it's the last episode of the season. We'll do it next year.
Well, I mean, Alan really geared up for this episode.
I know. He was like so excited to see you. He's like,
I know. I can tell he dressed in a shirt that with colors not found in nature. It's unbelievable. You should see this shirt. If this was a bit, is this video here?
No. Do you want us to go on?
No. We want to keep the viewers. I mean, and the listeners. But Alan, were you excited to?
Honestly, I was because
tell your face.
My face?
Yes, that you're excited.
Oh, ha ha ha!
He even shaved.
I did, and I even trimmed this. It's much smaller. Look how tiny that is.
Do you say that to all the men?
I'm an honest, straightforward person, and I express myself.
It's good. I came back because I actually love you guys.
Oh, thank you so much. I love you too.
I thought I was going to do an interview about actual comedy and the business. And instead, it turned out to be a Comedy Central roast of Alan Weed. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Well, that was the game plan, but then it got changed to that.
Now, these shoes are the ones I had last week because my feet sometimes, they swell up just a touch. I have these beautiful suede, royal blue Calvin Klein's loafers.
I don't know what's more funny, the story or Barry looking.
Is this a shoe podcast?
We're promoting Vans this week.
Just a fashion statement.
It's hard to take fashion advice from a guy wearing a shirt from a Philippines rag shop and an orange scuba watch.
I bought this on Ventura Boulevard, right on Magnolia. They're closed now.
That's where they have all the scuba watches.
I wonder why they're closed now.
Man, business is hard in the fashion industry.
Yeah, at least they sold that one watch.
That's right. But I wanted to come back here because I like you guys. You
thank
got a
you.
Great chemistry.
Uh-huh.
You've interviewed some great people. Uh-huh. And I figured if I came back for the season finale, I could actually answer questions and that you want to answer it as opposed to rambling on forever.
Yeah, well, no, that was a great episode. I like the ramblings because we were trying to get Colin Kane, who you represent, mm-hmm. and then you're like, oh, he can't do it. I'll do it.
Is that what happened? Colin Kane is a very interesting guy.
Yeah.
For those of you who know him or study comedy or savants, he's, you know, there's all kinds of different comedians out there, just like music, but you don't think about it. You don't think about that Barry Manilow sells millions of records and so does Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah.
In comedy, you don't think that of the different types. You're so used to talking about the greats, you know, like that are working today, like Chappelle and Rock and Jim Jeffries and all those people. You don't think about the people that are sort of flying under the radar but selling out almost every show, and you don't understand why. And Colin has a very unique way of doing things, unlike other comics. First of all, if you follow comedy, he does probably the rarest kind of comedy. Now, I'm not saying on this microphone that his comedy, he would sit here and say that he's got the kind of comedy at the level of Chappelle.
Right.
He does his lane, and his lane is insult, hard-edged comedy.
Kind of like Alan Lee.
I've never seen his comedy, and even in this room, I haven't seen it. But
he wears the scuba socks. It's all visual.
That's prop comedy. So the thing about Colin is that if you can think about it, if you know comedy, think how many comedians you know that do insult comedy from start to finish, and it's hardcore, edgy comedy. So it's like, you know, there was Rickles.
Yeah.
There's Lampanelli. Mm-hmm. Dice, yeah, maybe does a mixture. So it's a rare form. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to make it big when you're doing that. And so when you mentioned Colin, it's fascinating to me because he's a guy who doesn't want to work all over the country. He probably is a guy who only works maybe 10 markets in the country.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to go out that much. He'd rather do a one-nighter for a lot of people, a lot of money, than just do a whole week. It's very exhausting for him, his kind of comedy, to be able to go, because you're essentially improvising a lot of the stuff you do.
Right.
And you have to put a lot into a kind. Some comedies you have to put more into. People might disagree with me, but the guy who stands there and has his routine set and has written it and rehearsed it and done it a million times, it's going to be easier than a guy who the pressure of knowing you're going on and half of the stuff you're doing, you don't know what you're going to do or how you're going to do it, but you know it's got to kill and you know you got to get a standing ovation, which is what he gets almost every night.
Yeah, so. I've seen him live. He's awesome. Yeah. I think he would have been perfect on the show because he would have been a good target for Alan Lee.
Well, the thing is, he doesn't really like to do a lot of radio and podcast either, because he has this thing where, like Colonel Sanders has the formula and nobody knows the formula.
I know the formula.
I don't even know Colin Kane's formula because I don't know how, if you were to ask me how he sells out every show without being on television that much, if you were to ask me how he does it without doing hardly any radio or any promotion at all, I don't know, but he has his own unique marketing system that he does and he controls. And it's a metaphor for artists out there. Like, he essentially does things the way he wants to, and he doesn't follow the rules. Right. I just did an interview for an article on Patrice O'Neill. Oh. And Patrice was a similar kind of artist, not in the material, but similar in the sense that, I'm going to do things the way I want to do them. And if it works for me, great. If it doesn't work for other people, hey, that's too bad. I'm going to do it. And if I become rich or I become broke or anywhere in between, I'm going to follow my gut and do what I want to do and not change anything.
Yeah, yeah. That's like actually a perfect marketing plan for a comic, though. You know what I mean? Like Todd Glass is like that. He just does it how he wants to do it.
I just interviewed him
in
Montreal for the Industry Standard, the podcast. And I wasn't expecting it, but he got really, 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 really hot and about a topic that we talked about, which was, do I think the comedians of yesterday were or are stronger than the comedians of today? And my thought process was, I don't know what the differential is. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's 1% or 50%, but when you think of the comics of yesterday, like, Rodney and Pryor and Eddie Murphy and Steve Martin and
wait, they were yesterday?
Yeah, like from the 80s.
No, I know.
I'm sorry, I'm not talking in a time-space continuum that works for you.
Yesterday.
That was a sophisticated joke for me. I have Asperger's, so I was like trying to...
Oh, stop using that fucking thing as an excuse all the time to get ratings. Fucking anybody will do anything for ratings. Yeah. All right.
But
I want to tell you something. If you have Asperger's, then most of the population has some kind of disability.
No, they do, actually.
They all have Asperger's.
I think everyone has a form of something. Yeah, I really do.
You're very present.
Yeah.
But the point being,
I live in today.
you live in today. But the point being, I mentioned about 10 or 12 people who I thought were, Carl, and I could go on and on. And we were going back and forth with his list, and his argument was, which is a very good argument, you don't know where Chappelle and Rock and Jim Jeffries and Jim Gaffigan and all these great people of today, and I'm missing a ton because there's so many amazing people out there. You don't know where they're going to be, you know, in 20 years, 30 years either. So these people could be equal or better than all of those people. But I think the argument that I had for him was, if I were to sit Bill Burr, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, and Jim Jeffries in a room, and I were to ask them, do you think you're, at this stage of the game, do you think you're a better comedian than Richard Pryor or Bill Cosby was or Carlin or, and they'd say, I would presume they would say, well, those people are the greatest of all time. I hope by the end of my career that I get to a point where people consider me in that category. I think that would be the kind of answer I presume that they would say.
Right.
Inside, I know that Bill Burr and Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock and Jim Jeffries know that they would take any section of some of the greatest material that they've ever performed and put it up next to those people and feel proud that they were at that level, but I don't think they'd verbalize it.
Right, right. Yeah. So Todd was saying that, so who won the argument?
Well, you'll have to listen to the podcast when it comes out to see who won the argument. It's not about winning.
No. But
I interviewed this guy, Victor Levin, who has a movie coming out called Destination Wedding with Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder.
Yeah, we talked about that a lot. And we met him.
You met him out of the elevator. Yeah. And we talked about that last episode.
Yeah.
But what I don't think we talked about was, is that, and if we did, you'll edit it out.
No, but we don't edit.
But he talked about how I said, have you been fired? Mm-hmm. And he said, Barry, I don't know how to tell you this, but I've never been fired. Writers are never fired, Barry. I said, what are you talking about, Victor? He says, no. What happens is, Barry, is you're not asked back. And so that relates to me, to what we were just talking about, in a different sense.
Yeah.
There's just a different word for it.
Yeah, yeah. In my mind, it's think, oh, so you're just fired. But no, you were telling me that script only has Keanu and Winona Ryder, and they're the only two actors in it, and I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a cool movie, and but every artist, you know, the way they work, and I presume, again, this is what this show is about, is about the artist's way, the artist's point of view, and how it is, and I think that's the unique thing about why I love this business so much, is there's so much, you know. You go into a comedy club, and let's say Gary Gulman's performing, who's one of the greatest performers, great material, great guy, amazing. You'll see him in a corner, he'll have a notebook, he'll be writing down things, he's got everything. And then you talk about somebody like Patrice O'Neill or Dave Chappelle. I don't think I've ever seen a piece of paper and a pen ever near them. And you wonder, well, how do they do this material? How do they go on for hours? How do they make it work? And they've never even written anything down.
Right.
They don't have a computer with it. You know, for me, like, can you imagine the people listening? I guess you can imagine, because we all know people who go to the grocery store without a list.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, do you know what you're getting? Yeah, I know what I'm getting. And they walk through each aisle, and they get what they get, and it's familiar.
Right.
And there's other people who have to have that list.
To like, check it off.
Yeah, I'm the guy who has to have the list.
Oh, are you?
Yes.
I'm the guy who just walks around, like, the cereal aisle and be like, oh, I want cereal. Oh, actually, I changed my mind. I want Pop-Tarts. You know, so that's how I write.
Is that like an improv comic?
What?
Are you saying that's an improv?
No, I was just telling him how I shop for groceries. I wasn't telling him how.
No, but you said you changed your mind at that moment, and you found that you know, like...
Alan, have you ever been sick for a podcast?
Well, I've had been under the weather.
Like where you didn't show up?
Yes.
Yeah, there's been a couple times.
And how were those shows?
Well, I'll let the viewers be the judge of that.
Oh, that was awesome.
I did one by myself with Ron Lynch.
Oh, yeah, I did miss one.
Ron Lynch.
Yeah. I started with Ron Lynch.
Really?
In Boston.
He's wonderful.
He's an amazing guy.
No, but he's improvisational. Can I say that?
He did this routine I'll never forget on an open mic night. He did a character called Felix Foob. And this shows you how long ago it was. Mm-hmm. So do you remember, you guys won't remember, maybe the audience will remember, the cassette recorders that were probably 8 inches long by 6 inches or 5 inches
and then
wide.
And you put the tape in.
And you put the cassette tape in, and they had the 5 or 6 buttons on the one side.
Rewind, fast forward, stop, pause, play.
And you'd press play and record to...
Together.
To record.
Yeah, exactly.
And there'd be a pause button if you wanted. Yeah. So he goes on stage, introduced as Felix Foob for an open mic night. And he walks up very slow and methodically with that shirt you're wearing, Alan. And same scuba watch and shoes from Morgan Memorial.
Does Ron Lynch own this store?
And apparently. And he had there was a rope around his neck down like a chain about mid-chest. And it was attached to this cassette recorder that was hanging from his body. But you got to remember, this is a big device. This
right.
thing weighs about maybe 2 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And he just gets up there. He takes the mic stand, brings it down to where the speaker is of the thing, presses play on the cassette recorder, and the whole act is him just staring straight ahead at the audience, never flinching, never moving, and the tape recorder going, "How you doing? Thank you very much." And he would just do jokes, and that one didn't go well. And but the recording, he did the recording with pauses where he thought the crowd would laugh, where they wouldn't laugh, and it was 5 minutes of the funniest. I was blown away, but I love that, and I never saw him do it again.
Oh man. We should call him and tell him to do it again.
Oh,
you'd be like, Barry Katz told us an amazing story about you.
He used to be part of a comedy team, and I'm embarrassed to say that I forget the name of the comedy team. And I used to book this club called Play It Again Sam's in Boston. It was a basement comedy club, and the stage was in the corner, and the ceilings were very low, sort of like the Comedy Cellar in New York, where if you're 6'3" or whatever, you'd be right up against the ceiling. It wasn't even a 7-foot ceiling.
Right.
And they used to close off with this bit that I loved. I thought it was so original, although it was a physical bit, and it wasn't a bit where there was words and that was, you would say, as a smart bit.
Right.
But they say, before we go, we'd like to do a little bit we call bumper comedians. And they take the mic stand, put it behind their back. If they could only probably do it in my club.
Right.
And have the mic, top of the mic stand, touch the ceiling. And they would just go around and bang into each other for like a minute. And that was their closing bit.
Oh, my
That's
God.
Cool.
So we had a couple of questions for you that we didn't get to on part one.
What are those questions?
Well, question number one was, did you do any TED Talks this week?
I've been doing a TED Talk every day because of this show. Unfortunately, I've only done it in my own house.
Yeah.
But I've talked to a guy named Ted once this week, but no, I haven't done any. But thank you for asking.
Yeah. Nice. How was that talk? Was he Ted a nice guy?
Ted is very nice. Uh-huh. He's a very, very nice guy, and he does not have Asperger's.
Does he at least have the scuba watch?
People with the name Ted usually are nice, in my opinion.
They are nice?
Yeah.
What about Alan?
Oh, Alan. I think Alan is wonderful.
Are you A-L-A-N or A-L?
One L. A-L-A-N.
What did I say?
You said, are you one A?
He asked you if you were A-L-A-N, and then you said one L.
He asked me if there were two A's or one A.
Can we re-roll the tape?
Well, it's a listening exercise.
You know, I want you to know something, Alan. when I left the studio last time I was here,
yes,
and I got in my car, I thought to myself, being with Alan is like smoking thousands of cartons of cigarettes. It's just, it was an hour of my life I will never get back.
Well, thank you for the compliment. I appreciate that.
But then, hey, at least he gave you the black lung, right?
Yes, he did do that.
The black lung is when you get cigarettes. Alan's just giving me death stares.
I'm overwhelmed by it. By the way, how is Staples Coffee?
Alan, I don't drink coffee. This is this is something just in a cup that I got from my last meeting.
Oh wow.
He just did a meeting.
The assistant gave me this at CBS.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
CBS.
CBS, wonderful. What were you pitching something? Or?
I was pitching a television show,
oh,
yes.
Oh, my.
Was there a part for Alan Wheat?
Well, was there? Hawaii 6-0.
No. There's definitely... Hawaii 7-0. We definitely talked about needing something for... I haven't even said anything yet.
You just know because it's going to be good.
Jesus. No, we did definitely talk about getting a new craft service person.
Oh. I am available for that, by the way.
I was like, well, I'll take it. Did you ever see this movie called Courage? Did you ever see this movie called Career Opportunities? It was with Frank Whaley, and he goes for an interview to work at Target, and he thinks he's working as like the store director, and John Candy's interviewing him, and he's like, "Oh, I thought you were being interviewed for the store director, but now I see on the paper you're being interviewed for night cleanup boy." And Frank Whaley's like, "What's the pay?" John Candy's like, "Minimum wage, two breaks and a lunch." And he's like, "I'll take it."
I love Frank Whaley. Frank Whaley started in New York, and he actually performed at my comedy club.
Oh, really? Wow. How was that?
Good. I loved, and he had a great band too. Was it Frank Whaley and the Whalers? I forget what it was, but yeah.
I love Frank Whaley. I've been trying to get him for 5 years since I've had this, but yeah, he's an actor now.
It's okay. You'll get anybody you want as long as somebody's sick.
But no, like I wanted to ask you about career opportunities because that's one of my favorite movies.
Well, let's talk about your career opportunities.
Oh.
All right, let's talk about
part your career
two.
And what's
this is
happening.
Part two.
Part two?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Why don't we talk about what's happening with you and how it relates to other comedians. So tell me comedians you started with who passed you. Three comedians you started with who passed you.
Like career-wise?
Yeah, tell me three.
Okay, there's one named Grant Cotter.
Got it, Grant Cotter. Tell me another
one. He's very funny. I would say Amir Kay.
Amir Kay, of course.
Very
he was
funny.
On the new Mad TV.
Yeah, and then I would say who... Probably Jennifer Murphy. Jen Murphy,
yeah. Of course. Yes. So. Great. All three great. So tell me why you think they are at a level that's a little higher than yours now. What's your opinion?
Oh, because I think that they're just so funny.
And you're not funny.
No, I think I'm very funny. But I think that
are you as funny as they are?
Ooh, that's going to be tough stuff. I think I could...
Are you as funny
them.
As they are, yes or no?
I think I could be one of them.
Yes or no?
I think, well, no, because if I could only beat one, 60, no, I'm not as funny as them.
So you're not as funny as them. So that's why you haven't gotten to their level.
Yeah, but I'm not jealous of them. I'm proud of them.
I didn't say you were jealous.
Oh, okay.
So we're trying to figure out why things are going the way they're going. So
right.
How to get it where it's supposed to go.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And so that's true of anybody in any job, because it doesn't matter where you are. You could be at the law firm and a promotion comes up for somebody in the office and you're up for the promotion and you don't get it and somebody else in the office gets it, and you think to yourself, well, why did they get it?
Right.
And I don't.
Because we were talking about how, like, every artist, you said that, you know, you've also managed people where they've talked to you about that, you know, where they're like, oh, why I'm not, you know. And I actually put a lot of thought on what you said, and I am exactly like all those artists, you know what I mean? Like, I do think that. But I also, like, came up with a solution on why I'm not there, and I want to tell you.
I'm listening.
Okay. Well, the reason is...
Is one of them doing a podcast on your own?
Maybe. Oh, I don't know.
Just check.
But the reason is...
Please.
He's giving you compliments.
I know. I know. I'm here.
But no, one of the reasons is because as a comedian, I'm very fearless as a comedian. But outside of comedy, I live in a very fearful world.
What are your three biggest fears?
Outside of comedy or
whatever.
My three biggest fears is death.
You fear dying?
Yes. Extremely.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I almost died once, and it's not...
On stage?
Yeah, okay, maybe I've almost died twice.
All right, so you have a fear of dying. How did you almost die?
I got in a car accident, and my car flipped over four times. I fell asleep when I was driving, and I didn't break any bones or anything, but that was a situation where I could have easily died.
Very fortunate.
You know what I mean? Like...
It's wrong of me, but I want to put a pin in this because I want to tell you something that happened to me that I've never told to anybody on any
air.
All right. And now that you said that to me, what I share with you is almost unbelievable to me. And I never shared it with anybody because I thought, like, this can't happen.
Okay.
So oftentimes I'll pull an all-nighter once a week to get all my work done because there's so much stuff to do. And I remember one night I pulled an all-nighter, and the next night I had a party or something that I had to go to, a business party where there was, you know, people were drinking and whatever. And I didn't really, I might have had one drink at best, but doubtful. But I was exhausted, and I went home early, and I drove home, and I could feel myself hallucinating, and I could feel myself falling asleep. Yeah. I pulled over, and I, you know, walked around outside as they tell you to do. I splashed water on my face.
Chewed ice,
but I could feel myself dozing off. So I'm on the Pacific Coast Highway. I'm by Sunset Boulevard. And then the next thing I know, I'm behind a red car that stopped. And I'm thinking, like, what is going on here? Like, why is this stopped here? It doesn't make any sense. And I realize I'm in the breakdown lane of the Pacific Coast Highway.
Whoa.
And there's no one in that car. And I've gone 4 miles. So I get out of my car. I do that thing again. I get back in my car. And I've got, like, 10 miles to my destination. I can feel myself dozing off. Next thing I know, I'm in front of a gate, like a gated house. I don't know where I am. I look at my navigation. I'm 6 miles past my house.
Wow.
So then I got out again. I kept myself awake, went home. I thought to myself, I'm never going to let this happen to me again.
Yeah.
But a month later, it happened again where I actually... came to consciousness, and I was up 4 miles up a windy road up in the mountains of Malibu from the Pacific Coast Highway, and I have no idea how I got there.
Wow.
So I think to myself, where your car flipped over 4 times, and how it's humanly possible that I fell asleep and lost consciousness and ended up in these places safe.
Jeez.
It just blows me away.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're lucky to be alive, and I will never let that happen to me again, and especially after you told me that story.
But you're also very lucky to be alive too.
Yeah, I'm more grateful now than I've ever been, but I'm sorry to bring the show to a screeching halt. So keep going.
So your
first thing was fear of death. Second fear was?
Second fear is probably not being loved by anyone.
Well, you got one person here who loves you.
Alan?
Alan. And me.
He does the kiss.
You got two people who love you.
Oh, I think.
Love by a significant other or love by family and friends?
I would say both. like a significant other, because, you know, I feel very lonely, and family and friends, mm-hmm. I feel that, mm-hmm. you know, I feel that they don't really love me. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Interesting. And the third thing?
The third thing I'm afraid of is my dream is to be a comedian, you know, and the success rate is so low because there's so many comics. The third thing I'm fear of is, you know, what if I never accomplish what I want to accomplish?
What do you want to accomplish?
I want to accomplish, in all honesty, I want to be the best comedian to ever live.
Got it.
And that's very hard to, you know, those are words that are hard to say because, you know, that's kind of impossible because comedy's subjective, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so why do you have a fear of something that's not attainable? Mm-hmm. And when I say not attainable...
That's what scares me.
If the guys on Mount Rushmore of comedy, if I were to ask 20 comedians who's on the Mount Rushmore of comedy...
And there's only four of them.
And there's only four
okay.
of them. So would there be one common name in everybody's list? Would there be two? Would all four be the same in everybody's list? No way. So I don't think you should have a fear of something that's unattainable. You should just say, I want to be considered to be one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Because how do you say who's the greatest lawyer of all time? How do you say who's the greatest magician of all time? You know, if you talk to David Copperfield,
yeah.
who's been number one for 35 years,
yeah.
the guy made more money than all but four people in the entertainment business last year, except for Oprah, Steven Spielberg, Lucas, and Michael Jordan.
Oh,
he did 600 and God knows 80 shows last year.
Yeah.
He's 60 years old.
Yeah.
So, and if you were to ask him who's number one or who was the greatest magician of all time, it's possible he would say Houdini.
Mm-hmm.
And he would say we all stand on the shoulders of the greats before us. But the bottom line is that he is the greatest magician for 35 years in a row. No one has passed this guy. And the reason is because he's...
I'm sorry.
Are you going to show him a magic trick?
That's fantastic. Now, could you zip up your pants, please?
It was a thumb. I did that as a child. We all did. I thought it was a little humor. A little levity.
So the... No, it's...
he's like, hey, Barry, have you ever seen this before?
No, I was just going through my childhood. Magic.
No, it's good. It's good to go back to your childhood.
I remember my grandfather, actually, like, when I was, like, 4 or 5... I loved him very much, and he actually did that trick for me. You know, like, because he was, like, technically he was my step-grandfather, because he's my stepdad's dad. I remember when I first met him, he was, like, trying to be nice and stuff. He's like, oh, I know magic. I was like, really? He's like, yeah, have you ever seen this? And I was like, I thought he actually was taking off his thumb. Then years later, I found out he stole that from everyone else.
When did you first see that? When did... Oh, shoot.
No, I was just being real with you.
No,
like,
awesome.
Like, that reminded me. Like, I even got him tattooed on me, you know, when he died. So.
Awesome.
Yeah. But no, like, Alan was given a sweet moment, and then I suck.
Yeah, you don't. So, in other words, so aspiring to be one of the best is great.
Yes.
And for Copperfield, who I interviewed, was one of the greatest interviews I ever was a part of in my life for the Industry Standard podcast. It was just,
which is the best podcast besides Razor Risk.
Thanks, buddy. Meant a lot. But he's just, it just blew me away that a guy, like, at first glance, I said to myself, why is a guy that he made $863 million last year,
jeez.
Why is a guy doing 650 or 80 shows a year at 60 years old? He's got a beautiful family. He's got a great house, a great life. It just occurred to me that if you want to be one of the greatest of all time and get rid of that fear, you obviously have to outwork everybody.
Yeah.
Not just for 1 year, or 2 years, but for your whole career. And the only way that you can do it without outworking everybody else is if you're just a natural genius who just naturally goes up and... But even then, how long can that possibly last? I don't know how long that can last. And to me, the best are the ones that work the hardest and work the smartest and know how to navigate relationships with people.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you talk about Patrice O'Neill, great, great comedian, but he'd be the first one, if you were sitting here, you know, he had no problem shooting himself in the foot. And he had no problems being in a situation where he complicated winning. And when you have fears like you have, you're complicating winning. You got to, if I were to give you any advice, and you're not asking me for it, but the thing is for you or anybody listening out there, you just said something so profound. You said in your stand-up, you have no fear.
Yeah.
You go on any crowd, you go up, and you have no fear. Your approach to it is fearlessness. And that's why the last 5 years, you feel really funny, and you're getting where you want to go. In the other side of your life, you have all these fears.
Yeah.
And so how are you going to get anywhere if you're not using the same formula that you're using on the other thing?
The thing that I look at it as is, because I actually thought about this, you know, because I had a feeling we were going to talk about this. I really did. The thing is, when I'm on comedy, I feel that I'm not leashed. I feel like when I'm, you know, not on stage, I feel I'm very leashed. So
okay, so one of the things you said was, I have a fear that people won't love me.
Yeah.
So like, well, how are you leashed to that?
Like off stage, because I feel that if I just want to be, you know, who I am, because who I am on stage and who I am off stage is the same person. Like, I don't have a personality difference. It's just, I feel that if I am this outgoing, funny person who comes up with all this weird stuff off stage, everyone's going to think I'm 20 times weirder. You know what I mean? And like, I'm pretty broken, you know what I mean? So it's like, kind of like, So I get fear of like, okay, maybe they don't like me, maybe they do, you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Let's go toe-to-toe on this for a second.
No, but does what I'm saying make sense? Am I speaking English or gibberish?
Yeah, well, it makes sense to you more than anybody else because you're the one, I mean...
I dropped my cap. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, if I was...
The biggest thing that I would say to you is I can't believe that you actually believe your own bullshit.
What?
That's the first thing I'd say to you.
All
it is just, you know, shit you're making up in your mind. Nobody gives a fuck who you love, who loves you, who doesn't love you, except for you.
Yeah.
You know,
so an insecurity.
All that stuff. You think anybody listening knows who loves you and who doesn't love you and has a tally and a list? Let me see. You got Keith Rizzo. Let me see. He's got mom. Yeah, dad doesn't love him as much.
They'd say dad is actually questionable.
Questionable sister. Oh, shit. Let me see. Let me go to the second page. Cousins. Yeah.
Alan.
Cousin Jackie doesn't love that.
Oh, we know they love you.
Ex-girlfriends or boyfriends. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Yeah. Nobody cares. It's all in your own fucking head.
But do you think that other people are like, do you think I'm the only one who thinks that, or do you think everyone else who has these fears?
Everybody thinks everything. There isn't one thought that hasn't been thought.
Oh.
There isn't one insecurity that hasn't been actualized.
Okay.
So the point being is that let's look at your fear. So your fear, you're going a certain way, you're not being yourself out there because you're afraid people won't love you for who you are. So let's figure out how that's going for you. Let's look at the last 5 years when you say you've been your funniest professionally, correct? Right. The last 5 years you've been your funniest, right?
Yes.
So during those 5 years, you haven't really been yourself off stage because you're afraid people won't love you as much. So let's look at that for a second.
Okay.
Really, don't no jokes.
No.
How many people do you feel love you?
In my life right now?
Yes.
Probably maybe 10.
10. Great. You got 10 people that love you. Okay? Let's pretend 5 years ago you were yourself. when you're outside with people, you did whatever you wanted, you handled things the way you wanted to, you lived your life how you wanted to live it for the last 5 years personally. Mm-hmm. If you had to guess, how many people would love you right now?
Wait, from 5 years ago?
No.
Oh,
you got
right
10
now.
People who love you now. Let's pretend we go back and 5 years ago and we go back in time, and from that point until now,
okay,
you're
so
who
like
you
want
to be
okay.
off stage. You do whatever you want to do. You talk the way you want to do. You fuck with people. You joke. You don't hold anything back. How many of those 10 people don't love you today? Be honest.
I would say...
Be really honest.
I'm being honest. I would say maybe there would be more than 10.
You'd have more than 10 people that would love you.
Yeah.
So then what the fuck are you afraid of? You're afraid of people not loving you. You're doing things your way, holding back.
Yeah.
And 10 people love you. If you're yourself, more people would love you. Where's the fear?
Right.
What do you fear? What are you afraid of?
Well, from 5 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But, I don't know. I'm scared.
No, just answer that question, because you'll see what bullshit it is.
Okay, I'm scared of loving back, maybe.
You didn't say that. We're talking about the people that love you.
Yeah.
You said, I'm afraid people won't love me.
Right.
So you just admitted that if you were yourself for the last 5 years, you'd have more people that loved you.
Yeah.
So your fear is unfounded.
Yeah, that's a better word for it, yeah.
So can we get rid of that fear? Because it doesn't exist. It's ridiculous.
Oh, okay.
All right?
Oh. Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
All right, so let's go back to the second fear. What was the second fear?
Death.
Death. Okay, so you fear death.
But I think everyone fears that, right?
A lot of people do, but...
Okay.
But my mother used to have this saying. She used to say, I'm sure you've heard it, you make plans and God laughs.
Oh, I've never heard it.
And
never
so the point is that...
But I've never met your mother.
No, you haven't. And you won't. Mom, guess who's not coming to dinner? Alan. But the point I'm trying to make is
hungry.
That, you know, what's the point of fearing something that it's the one thing in our lives that we have no control over? Dennis Leary used to have this great bit early on when I started with Dennis. And he used to, you know, because Dennis used to smoke tons of cigarettes on stage, just constant smoke. You can't do it so much anymore, except if you're Chappelle who gets away with it. And he says, people always tell me, you should quit smoking. You're going to die. You're going to die. Quit smoking. And then he talked about this guy back then in the 80s and 90s who was a guru for fitness. His name was Jim Fix. Jim Fix was a guy who believed in the regimen of jogging and that cardiovascular training. Mm-hmm. And so he's on stage. He's like, yeah, people try to, you know, Dennis, you should jog. You should jog to be healthy. Yeah, I should jog. You know, Jim Fix, the famous guy who says you should jog, he died. You know how he died? He died of a heart attack. You know who found him on the side of the road? Two smokers. That looks like Jim Fix. Yeah. Let's go smoke another cigarette. So the point being is that we don't have any control over that. So why not just go out and make your impact to the world every day like it's your last and give everything you have to your profession and love and give everything, everybody, inspire people as much as you can, because the bottom line is, sadly, everybody in this lifetime has been born and everybody's going to die. And everybody has the same 24 hours every day. And so what are you going to do with it and what are you going to make of it? We all know people who've died. You especially shouldn't fear death. You should be excited about life because you cheated death.
Yeah.
The world gave you a second chance. So every time you think in your mind about death...
Well, so did you.
But I don't think about it in those terms. So
every
time you think about the fear of death, it's another minute that you're not working on something that can help inspire and create greatness that can help people in the world. And so my feeling is that this is true of anything. Whenever you think a negative thought in your head, I think the best thing to do is to yell as loud as you can silently and say cancel. So every time, and this is true for everybody in the audience, anything, it doesn't matter if you feel like you've been diagnosed with something like cancer and you say, oh, I'm going to die, just yell in your mind, cancel, mm-hmm. and until the thought goes away. Mm-hmm. And it works. I remember a person that I knew from a long time ago, a person from Arcadia, Florida. Actually, her profession was a psychic. And that was one of her favorite things that she said whenever you're thinking negative thoughts, just get rid of them out of your mind. And she always thought that that was the corniest but best way to do it, because if you keep yelling at yourself to cancel the thought, eventually mm-hmm. you will and you'll go on to the next thought. What's the third fear?
Oh, of mine? Mm-hmm. It was of not making it in comedy.
Yeah. So that's something you do control.
Yeah.
And every artist out there controls. And so you control what you do. So you look at somebody like, I just interviewed Ricky Lindholm and Kate Micucci, Garfunkel and Oates.
Oh, yeah.
And they had individual careers. Now, Ricky Lindholm, the first job I believe she ever booked was as Hilary Swank's sister in Million Dollar Baby. Mm-hmm. So the first role she ever booked,
she was in that?
She was in a movie that won an Academy Award.
Yeah.
What, you know, where do you go from that? But she did great stuff, worked in a lot of stuff. She worked with Tim Robbins at the Actors Gang, amazing mm-hmm. stuff. And Kate did a number of different great things.
Mm-hmm.
And then they collaborated together and started writing these songs and shooting these videos. And they had no money in their bank account. They borrowed money. They did whatever. They were, you know, they had nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
But they thought they could create something great. They worked really hard on it. They pushed themselves. They shot the video. And 10 million views. And it's, you know, again, you just got to work on the craft and whatever cylinders you have in your engine. How many cylinders in your engine are you working on?
Yeah.
What are you doing? I mean, if you look at a comedian, if you look at all the things that a comedian
can do. If you need to pick that up again, it might be Chappelle.
What am I picking up?
Oh, isn't your phone ringing?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No. If it's Dave, you could be like, hey, Dave.
No, it's a, I'm just it's on a the former Saturday Night Live cast member who's calling me.
Excellent.
I'm dropping more names than Oscar Schindler. So if you look at the 10 cylinders, not 10 cylinders, but you look at all the cylinders, mm-hmm. let's just say a comedian's, I know there's a lot of different people who listen to this, but let's just take a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just think of all the things right now together that a comedian has talent that they can do, okay? So they can act, okay? They can act comedically.
Mm-hmm.
Or dramatically. So I'm going to use those two cylinders, comedically or dramatically. They can host. They could host shows, television shows, game shows. They could host any kind of thing. You know, Bert Kreischer is doing something now, a cooking show, a comedy cooking show. I think it gets more views than any cooking show ever, and it's on. It's not even on a network, really. I mean, yeah. It's just, you know, it's on
the internet.
Yeah, it's on all things comedy. All right, so there's hosting. There's writing television. Mm-hmm. You know, there's writing television half-hour comedy. There's writing television drama. Mm-hmm. There's writing film. Comedy, drama, horror. And I'm saying these things, and now I'm at 8 cylinders right now. And why am I saying these things? I'm saying these things because Jordan Peele was a comedy guy.
Yeah.
Jordan Peele's a comedy guy. But he wrote Get Out. Would you ever, if Jordan Peele walked in any manager agent's office and he said, you know, this next thing I do, I really want to do a horror movie.
Yeah.
Jordan, you know, could you just stay in your lane?
Yeah.
No, I really want to do this. Bo Burnham, okay? Guitar comic in his bedroom, okay? Not even a comic.
Mm-hmm.
Never did comedy. Gets millions of views, becomes that guy. What does he do next? What does he do at 27? Eighth grade. directs it, produces it, critically acclaimed. If Bo Burnham walked in anyone's office and said, you know, I'm thinking of doing this movie Eighth Grade. Mm-hmm. What? You know, it's like John Ridley, great comedian. Great comedian. Look him up.
Yeah.
Everything he's writing, dramatic, amazing, nominated for Academy Awards. It's like, so we're at eight right now. You got radio. You got podcast. Now we're at 10. What have we got left here? We got books. That's 11. A, write a book.
Audiobooks, 12.
Audiobook, 12. So, and I'm not even thinking of everything I possibly can think of.
Right.
You know, in terms of these things. We got directing.
Oh. That's what Alan Lee wants to do.
Yeah. You got producing. So I'm sure there's probably 15 to 20 different lanes that every comedian could do. Oh, sorry. So it's writing comedy music.
Oh.
Yeah. Writing regular music.
Advertising.
Performing it. You know, these are all things that you know, are there. The biggest thing we're forgetting here, and we're at probably 17, is stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
You know, performing in front of audiences. And, you know, so when you look at something, the way I see it, and again, I have a vision of how I think things can be, and I believe they can be that way. But let's just pretend we throw out all those lanes and we just look at just acting and stand-up. And you look at these things, and when I see... You look at balance. It's like sports. You don't want to have a player like... don't get me wrong. Isaiah Thomas is an amazing player. Amazing. I mean, the guy is tremendous. Mm-hmm. But he's not a defensive player. Mm-hmm. Carmelo Anthony can normally score tremendously, except in last year's playoffs, but not a defensive player. But the greatest players in the NBA that everybody knows are the greatest players are two-way
Eddie
players.
Jones.
Are two-way players who can play defense and offense, yeah, and can dish out assists. So Rondo, no matter what kind of a problem he ever is, and people know that he's difficult, and we talked about comedians that are difficult, when you're that talented and you can dish assists, you can rebound, you can score a little. I mean,
a little.
You're there. And yeah, so everybody looks at that. So it's the same thing in comedy. I look at, you're going to be best off if you have a balanced career and your finances come from a lot of different places, or at least two places. The greatest comedians you'll ever find that have the most success in the world are the ones that make just as much money doing personal appearances as they do acting. Kevin Hart, it's quite possible that he makes just as much money doing stand-up as he does in acting.
Yeah.
He might make more in stand-up, but the point being, it's there's a balance there.
Right.
You look at Jim Gaffigan, he can act, you know, and he can do stand-up. And the people who don't do that are the ones that are imbalanced, are normally not at the highest end of the comedy list and at the top of the comedy list, because Jim Jeffries, he does great stand-up, he's got his own show.
Whitney Cummings,
great stand-up, he has a lot of dates, does writing, you know, Two Broke Girls. Mm-hmm. She's not an actor on the show.
Mm-hmm. She writes it.
But
she also wrote for Roseanne.
Yeah. And so the point is that as a comic, you have all these lanes. So you're using a lot of your lanes. You're doing the stand-up. You're doing the podcast. Uh-huh. But what else are you doing? Are you getting up every morning and are you working on scenes and putting them on tape as an actor?
Right.
And going back and forth and looking at them? Are you taking acting classes? And that's the thing that most comedians don't do is they, if you think about it, comedians love doing stand-up comedy because they write, direct, produce, star in. You know, they do everything, and they're in control, total control. of their life and their business. Every show they do, no one goes up before they go on and says, hey, listen, before you go on, I just want to let you know you can't say fuck. And, you know, that bit you do about gun control, don't do that here.
Yeah.
And the bit you do about holding the girl's head and saying you hate her while she's doing that to you, don't do that. But everything else is good.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you a really amazing story about...
We do have the light, though.
How much time do we have?
We have, like, 2 minutes.
I want to hear this.
We could bring you back for season six.
No, I'm going to say this real quickly to show you how to be true to your art and what it is and why people do things. Yeah. Dane Cook had 3 corporate gigs. Like $50,000 each when he had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He gets done with the first gig, gets a standing ovation. The guy comes back and he says, listen, Dane, for the next gigs, could you not swear for the next gigs? And he took the guy's check, $50,000, and ripped it up and gave it to him and said, find somebody to do the other gigs.
Uh-huh.
And so he was being true to himself. But he knew what he had to do, and he was a smart business person. Mm-hmm. And if you follow what he did, you can see how you can make things happen with all the different lanes. He acted, he wrote, he did a lot of different things. He marketed himself.
Mm-hmm.
And for you and every comic and artist out there, that's what you have the ability to do. Work on those lanes. Work hard on them like you do your stand-up. And balance your career, and you'll rise to the top faster than you can ever imagine.
Yeah, I wanted to leave on this, though, but last time on part one, you said that I got to make this fast because we don't have a lot of time, but you said that you got to mail your product to different people over and over again, you know, FedEx it, mm-hmm. 45, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you got to do what it takes to get your name seen. So I couldn't afford a FedEx guy, but I got you something that I wrote, and... I'm hoping that, you know, you see that since I hand-delivered it to you, regardless what you do with it, I hope you know that it's from my heart. And thank you very much for doing Razor Riffs, buddy.
I'm honored that you gave me this, and I will definitely look at it. And I will tell you what I think, and I'm glad you wrote it. So that's another lane you're in and you're doing.
I love you very much, buddy.
Love you. You should be very proud. Alan, no matter what I said to you, just remember, I meant it.
Thank you. And Barry.
I love you, Alan.
Thank you. And I won't do one of these 10 in my career.
He's calling back the magic act with a thumb. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's an honor to do the finale.
Thank you. Oh, please.
Subscribe to Razor Riffs. Follow us on social media. Rate and review. Also, Barry Katz has the second best podcast in the world.
One of the best.
Yeah. Industry standard.
Industry standard.
And rate and review on that. And
I'm right here today.
I love you, Barry.
Thank you so
much,
Barry.
I love you guys. Thank you so much.
Wow.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.